Loud and clear. I got a question for you.
Well, I heard all your questions.
Well, I have one for you specifically.
Okay.
If Christianity were true and you received all of your evidence, will you become a Christian and trust in Jesus for salvation?
I'm not sure.
Oh, there's... it's you! I remember you! What's up?
So my answer to that is, I'm not sure. There's probably a lot of things that are true that have, like, happened that I've experienced, but I'm just not aware of.
Wait, break that down.
So there's all kinds of things. So, like, have you ever been wrong before?
Yeah, multiple times, of course.
Right, so the facts and the truth was always there, but you were just simply mistaken. So, like, if you're asking me if Christianity was true, would I believe it? I'm not sure, because there's all kinds of things that have been true that I've been wrong about. We all have that experience. So I'm not really sure what this question's designed to, like, do.
Well, the question is designed for you trusting in Jesus. That's the ultimate goal and outcome, right?
Trusting in Jesus. Why would I do that? Yeah.
Was because if Christianity is true and it states that Jesus is God and he's coming back to judge the world in righteousness, but by trusting in him, that's the only way to be saved.
Why should I believe that other than the vague threat that you just gave me?
I didn't give you a vague threat. I gave you what it says in Christianity.
Okay, well, Christianity gives vague threats then. If you don't, then bad things will happen to you. See, you haven't given me a reason to believe it yet, except for Pascal's wager, which is really weak.
Well, no. A reason to believe on it is, like I said, if Christianity is true and Jesus is God and he is coming back, it is important to be in right standing with him, right? Because he talks about eternal life,
but clippity-clop, the magic being from some other galaxy could be the thing that actually does that, and the penalty for not believing in that is equally severe. Well, so I'm in trouble in infinite number of ways, and so are you.
No, I'm not. There's literally evidence. There's no. What's your evidence for the clippity clap bean?
I don't have evidence, but it's not impossible.
Right, but there is evidence that Christianity is true. We have tons of evidence. Sure. Tons of eyewitnesses.
It's one of infinite possibilities.
It's not a possibility if it actually happened. Like, Jesus was crucified, and that actually happened. It wasn't a possibility.
So all you're saying is, if things are true, then they're true. That's really all you're saying with that. But, Jesus being crucified, I agree that that happened, but Spartacus was crucified, so.
Well, do you agree that Jesus rose from the dead?
No.
Eyewitnesses were convinced that Jesus rose from the dead?
Oh, there could have been people that were convinced. As far as eyewitnesses, I'm not sure about that. But that wouldn't necessarily prove anything either, but there are no eyewitness like accounts. I mean, not
are you
really
joking?
Name one eyewitness that wrote it down.
We have Pontius Pilate himself, the man that actually
what did he ever die. So he's it's not said anywhere that he witnessed the resurrection, but what did he ever write down?
Well, he actually did witness the Lord right in front of him, and he bowed down to him. He wrote a letter to Herod, and he stated exactly what him and his wife saw.
That he bowed down to Jesus? And where is Pontius Pilate's letter?
It is the exact whereabouts? I don't know. But it's definitely online, and I actually have the link right here in front of me.
But that just sounds like somebody said that Pontius Pilate did this, and they wrote it down decades, maybe centuries later.
Well, if you really want to use that, that's a cop-out, because if you can bring me up some evidence on why evolution is true, I could sit here and say, well, somebody
literally
said that.
Genetics or the fossil record or comparative anatomy, embryology.
Mm-hmm. You were saying?
That's the evidence.
So evolution is a fact or is it a theory?
Well, evolution is a fact. It's a law that evolution occurs. The theory explains how it happens. I'm pretty sure you would agree with basically all of the premises of it, except the only thing you would disagree with is probably like the implications of it.
Well, I don't agree that I have relations to a strawberry. That's what evolutionists believe.
You actually do though, and it's really easy to prove. No, so, are you and I related?
By nature, Yeah, we
No,
have the
like
same human
literally.
nature.
No, like literally. We know what it means for
No,
two organisms to be related.
we're not related.
You and I?
I'm not your brother, no. We have this,
You don't
we're
have
human beings. We're human beings.
to. So
Well,
even under your worldview, you believe we are related because you believe that at one time there were only two people and everybody is descendants of them. So you think you in your worldview we're related.
oh, okay. If you really want to break that down, yeah, well, you're my long distance brother. Yeah, given the biblical
Yeah,
accounts. Cool.
there is DNA that connects an ancestor between you and I in the past that we share.
Yeah.
So evolution would say that that's the case, and your belief system says that's the case.
Okay, so what is your response to,
Well,
let me
can
see.
I only have like two more things like along this
Oh yeah, good.
thing to, and then you can and then just say whatever you want. So if you and I had literally zero relationship between us, that's only possible one way. Do you know what that is?
No, what is that?
The only way that you and I could possibly have zero relationship is if we shared literally zero genes or genetic components with each other. That's the only way it's possible. Okay, all life on Earth shares at least one gene. So therefore, all life on Earth is related. That's the evidence that we have behind the idea.
Okay.
I mean, there's
That's
more than
okay.
just that, but that's one thing.
Okay. And you said that that's a fact, right?
That we share genes with all life on the planet? Yeah, we know
Yeah.
that.
Where does truth come from, given your worldview?
Where does truth come from? I don't know. I don't know what you mean by I don't know what you mean by why this is like a really weird pivot. Why are we talking about truth?
No, the reason why this, so the reason why is because you're sitting here telling me that whatever evidence you present is factual. It is right. That's what you have. It's true. But my question to you is what is truth given your worldview, and where does it come from?
Where do facts come from? I mean, if the universe
Yeah.
ex if you think the universe exists, I would regard that as a fact. So I mean, just existence itself are there are going to be factual things about this universe that we can experience and describe and make predictions about. If something's true, then you should be able to like empirically verify it. Make predict If you make predictions that constantly come true, that means that your predictive model is accurate. Now, it can always be more accurate. We can always learn more things. So I don't really get down to this like thing of the truth, but something can be truthful or factual and be incomplete. And I would argue that basically all scientific knowledge, that's like confirmed by evidence and stuff like that is factual and true in that sense, but you know, we haven't answered every single question, obviously.
But why, what standard? By what standard are all of
The
these scientific
evidence,
proof? So
well,
evidence is
the evidence and the methodology.
the methodology and the evidence, that's the standard?
I suppose, yeah.
But wait a
If
minute.
if reality really exists, then there are things we can understand about it, and that proposition being true would be verified by the investigative process. I mean, if you're going to tell me that truth comes from divine intervention, then I can just say in my imagination, Zip Zop, who's the actual supreme overlord of the cosmos, told me things that are true, and you have abs there's nothing you can do to refute me, but I don't think that that's actually useful
Well,
for anybody.
I can most definitely refute that claim. It's because
No,
you're
you
not the
can't.
standard. Yeah, Ken, you're not the standard of truth. You change every time,
Yes,
just like every other human
Zip Zop
being.
is, and he divinely revealed it to me. That's what I'm saying.
How do you know that he divinely revealed it to you? If you
The
live in a
same way
worldview
you
where
know that
everything.
you have the same way you have a personal relationship with whatever you believe in, I'll just claim the exact same thing.
Well, no, that's you can't do that. Is because
Yes,
I'm
I
trying to figure.
can.
No, you can't. I'm
Yes,
trying to
I
ask you
can.
what. What is your overall foundation of truth? If
Zip
you're just
Zop.
gonna,
Zip
if you're
Zop
gonna just gonna
divinely reveals it
bring
to
up,
me.
what chemical in the brain orchestrated that revelation?
It's not a chemical. Zip Zop divinely revealed it to me. Zip Zop's a supernatural
What's your
being. He's
evidence of
out.
that?
He's outside. It's divinely revealed to me. The same way you have a
How
personal
do you know?
relationship with whatever you believe in.
But wait a minute, how do you know epistemologically that that's correct?
Because it's divinely revealed to me and it's been implanted in my thoughts. I can't deny
How
it
do you
any
know?
more than I can deny that when I open my eyes, I see things.
How do you know that?
Because
How do
it's
you know
been
that you have
divinely
eyes?
revealed to me.
You were going in circles now, apparently.
I know. I'm just doing. Okay, so how do you know that truth exists? And please don't say what I said, because that's going to be kind of awkward. How do you know that truth exists?
Wait, how do I know? It's because there is a transcendent standard that.
How do you know that? How do you know
that? Because we all live as if there is.
Yeah, it's called Zip Zop. That's what I was just telling you. Yes, it is. It's called Zip Zop.
Okay.
And it was divinely revealed to me.
What's the transcendent laws that this so-called Zip Zop gave to everybody on the planet that we all follow?
He only revealed it to me, kind of like how God originally, you know, he only revealed himself to certain people like Moses and Noah, you know, others. But he kind of was like, I'm going to pick and choose certain people. Zip Zop divinely revealed this to me only.
Hmm. So it's
this is exactly the same as your claims.
Wait a minute. It's your truth versus my truth, right?
No, Zip Zop is the ultimate standard of truth, and Zip Zop revealed it to me.
He only revealed it to you, and he's not transcendent to everybody.
Why does he have to be transcendent to everybody?
Because if the truth exists and everybody borrows from that unchanging standard of truth to live their lives, it has to be objective and universal for everybody. It can't just be for you.
Oh. That right there, well, Zip Zop actually does reveal himself to everybody, but wicked people deny him. See, it's the exact same thing that you argue.
No, it's
well,
not.
Okay, let me, that was rude, so maybe you don't do that, but it's the exact same kind of thing that some apologists argue, so sorry for the spicy comment.
Spicy? What was spicy?
Well, it was accusatory, so.
Yeah, none taken. No offense taken.
So how do you know that your God is, like, the ultimate truth or whatever? Besides just claiming that it must exist, how do you know?
We look through the biblical accounts. All the biblical prophecies so far in the Old Testament have been fulfilled.
Like what?
With the exception of some.
Okay.
Yeah, not all of them are fulfilled yet, but the majority of them are. There were over 300 fulfilled in Christ. Eyewitnesses have heard this man and say he would be crucified. And three days later, he would rise again.
That, though.
We do.
Yeah, but
I mean,
well, I don't think we do though. I think
one of the biggest
evidence. Oh, jeez, I'm sorry, I dropped something. So I think all of that evidence is kind of like what I have on my whiteboard here, where it says it's mirror image. Sorry, but it says my favorite song is WAP, George Washington. That proves it, because it's written and it's in quotation marks. Well, the stuff in the Bible was written down decades after Jesus died in a language he didn't even speak.
Whoa! What's your evidence for that?
Like,
you don't think he spoke Greek?
Well, there's no good reason to think that he spoke Greek, considering in the place he lived. Considering he was a first century Palestinian peasant, they would have spoken Aramaic, like everybody in that region did.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, he actually spoke to the Romans in Greek. He spoke to Pontius Pilate himself.
Well, we don't know that. The story just claims so. Pontius Pilate crucified thousands of people. The idea that he would have given audience to Jesus, whom to Pontius Pilate was a nobody, is really, like, that is not likely, like, at all.
So if you want to use that same notion when it comes to the evidence that I present, what if I use the same exact thing that you're doing when it comes to any piece of evidence that you present? Oh, we have evidence on embryology. We have evidence on this, that, and the third.
Oh,
and
you, I can sit there you, and look at we you. Can, well, wait. We can look at embryos today. Like, that's doable. Science is reproducible. History isn't. But if there are things that happened historically, there would be evidence of it. That's why we have, like, you know, archaeology, I would argue, confirms a lot of the things, you know. Well, it can be used to confirm a lot of things that are, you know, told throughout history or whatever. But
do people write this evidence down?
What evidence?
All of the evidence. Well, most of the evidence that is presented. Do people write this stuff down?
I don't know if you're talking about like history, archaeology, or like biological science.
Just science. Well, we can use science for right now.
Yeah.
Any evidence.
It's published in academic journals like the National Library of Medicine, Science, Nature. I mean, there's huge numbers of these.
Okay, so...
And then, sorry, just one more thing. The studies also have to be peer-reviewed before they can be published in those things. And that's to try to catch errors that occur.
Okay, that's my point exactly. So if another individual wrote down this evidence and this is analyzed and inspected by another individual and you present your evidence to me, I could just say, eh, whatever, you know, somebody wrote that. That's exactly what you just did to me. So why
because all you're doing is claiming that these things happened, and then you're not referring to evidence of the actual events. You're just referring to stories people told about them written down long after they happened. So I don't think that's equivalent to science, because science is continuously, like, the data that backs up the scientific ideas is continuously reproduced. The data about these events that happen, and I'm not, like, singling out the passion of the Christ. It's, like, literally for everything that happened in the past. It doesn't happen again, so the evidence isn't, like, reproduced or anything like that, you know? So you gotta find what you can. And, like, the fact of the matter is, there isn't a single physical piece of anything from Jesus' lifetime that is connected to him in any way that exists.
What on earth are you talking about? What are you talking about?
There isn't a single physical piece of anything from Jesus' lifetime that is connected to him that exists.
We have the Shroud of Turin. That's almost, what,
no.
I think 80.
Jeez, that thing has been dated to like the 1300s, 1300s, or 1400s consistently.
You're incorrect.
I'm not incorrect. So this is going to be like really weird, because
hold on.
Apologists completely doubt dating techniques, because those dating techniques tell us Earth is billions of years old. But then they go around and say, but yes, it proves the Shroud of Turin. But the Shroud of Turin, even if we say that is the burial cloth of Jesus, that I never said that Jesus didn't exist. Well, okay, you know what? That was stupid, because I was arguing we don't have any physical pieces of evidence from his lifetime. So that actually was sort of beside the point.
Well, you sat there and said that the Shroud of Turin was dated to the 12th to the 14th century. Yeah, it was carbon dated. But in 2019, they ran a new dating procedure called X-ray dating that actually X-ray dated the linen to the time of his death. So, it matches all of the biblical descriptions. And
there are no biblical descriptions of the... It says he was wrapped in a cloth, but I don't think it says anything about or do you just mean like the placement of the wounds on it or whatever?
Yeah, but that's what it was. I mean, and then the image on itself, the image on the actual shroud, they said that it was 6.4 gigawatts of radiation. Nobody can explain on the planet what the heck happened, and nobody can duplicate it.
That sounds like the most made up thing ever. Where did you hear that? 6.4 gigawatts of radiation? They could tell how much radiation a cloth 2,000 years ago experienced by X-raying it?
Well, no, the X-ray, they actually X-rayed the linen and they basically analyzed the time frame. I don't know what procedure they did to analyze the radiation off of it, but that's what they said. So, yeah. I'd encourage you to go look that up.
I mean, I'm looking at this thing. It says the measurements of the shroud are found to be particularly close to those of a linen fabric that historical records date back to the siege of Massa between 55 and 74 AD. I mean, that's close-ish to the date, but I mean, this would require a lot of reading. This isn't something that I'm going to be able to, that we're going to be able to figure out here and now, but no, like my point is, yes, we have gospel stories and stuff like that, but the oldest fragment of writing about Jesus it's called Papyrus 52, I believe. And it's from like 140, 150-ish, right in there. And it only contains a couple words. It's just a fragment of, I don't remember which gospel, but.
I think it was like either the Gospel of Matthew or John, one of them two. But, I mean, we have over 5,800 Greek manuscripts. We have 23,000 total manuscripts. We have 36,000 biblical quotations from the early church fathers. Over a million biblical quotation from the church fathers and 2,600,000 pages of the Greek New Testament manuscripts that confirm the Christian Bible we have today.
Yeah, except those were all written like long after the supposed events took place.
But again, we're quoted
like within this is a graph of what age do those manuscripts come from? And none of them are within 100 years of Jesus' lifetime. Four of them are within 200 years of his lifetime. But these aren't like copies of entire books. These are just fragments of things. You get 50 within 300 years of his lifetime. But the vast majority of all those thousands, I mean, this is literally 1,000 to 1,800 years after Jesus lived.
Well, what's your source for this? Because that's absolutely wrong. The Gospel of Matthew was written around what? I think is between 47 to 62. So I don't know what source you're reading.
No. Okay, so hold on, let me flip my camera.
Yeah, you do.
So we think that the earliest gospel is Mark. That's what the academic consensus is. And they think Mark was written between, what I've heard is between 60 and 85, right? So that's when we think it was written down, but we don't have those things. The things that we find are copies of copies of copies of copies of copies of copies of those originals, and none of the original things survive at all.
Well, how did they not survive if we have quotations and everything is perfectly aligned with what they had back then?
Well, they're actually not perfectly aligned, like, at all, but the copies of copies of copies survive, but not the originals. I mean, I have this, it says, no, you. Like, I could write this down, I could copy this, this is the original, and then burn the original. I have the copy, right? The original doesn't survive, but...
Okay, so let me see.
Like, there have been a... Oh, sorry.
No, okay, you're good. Yeah, Peterson, yeah, finish up.
Oh, sorry, I was gonna let you go on. I was just gonna say, like, we know there were, like, tons of revisions to, like, the Gospels and stuff. Because we've found, like, really old ones that are from, like, you know, the 300-400s-ish. And when we compare those to, like, even earlier fragments and later copies, we find that there's stuff that's just completely missing, stuff that's added, or things that were reworded. So, like, for example, a really famous story in the Gospels is the adulterous woman, or the woman caught in adultery, right? We have complete Gospels that are within a couple, like, 300-500 years of Jesus' lifetime, but none of them have that story. That story doesn't show up in any Gospel until, like, the 13 or 1400s.
So the 13 and 1400s?
Yeah.
Honestly, what are your sources for this? Because you're just making a bunch of claims, and I'm like, I need the links, bro.
Bart Ehrman. So I learned that from him. He's a biblical scholar, and when he started getting his theology degree, well, he doesn't have a degree in theology, sorry. When he went to college, he went to a Christian college to study this, and he was a Christian at the time. Later, he grew out of his faith, but he went into this with, you know, it wasn't like he had an agenda against Christianity. He just wanted to know what the facts were. But I mean, I could, where's his book? I have his book over there. I mean, I could get it and try to find that part, but you can look him up online and hear him say that same thing and take his own word for it and not mine.
Yeah, I seen the video. It actually says that the Textus Receptus includes the story of the adulterer. There's internal evidence that, let me see, inclusion of the verse breaks down John's narrative. Let me see. Okay. We should include a few words in the scripture. The original autographs are inerrant, but none of the original autographs are extant in existence. What we have today are thousands of ancient documents and citations that have allowed us to virtually recreate the autographs. The occasional phrase, verse, or section may come under scholastic review and debate, but no important doctrine of scripture is to be put in doubt due to these uncertainties. That the manuscripts are subject to ongoing scholarship does not prove that there is something wrong with God's word. It is a refining fire, one of the very processes that God has ordained to keep his word pure. A belief in inerrancy underpins a reverent, careful investigation of the text. So they're basically saying that they have the original autographs to actually recreate the story that already existed. And again, this
what was that in reference to, though?
The adulterous story that you mentioned.
Okay, so yeah. was, but so like we definitely don't have those original stories. So it just kind of sounds like a claim, like, if we adhere to in it, I don't know, I heard inerrancy in there, so it's like, if we assume it's inerrant, and we assume that the later copies are just copies of the originals, then the story must have been in the originals. But those are, like, those are wild assumptions.
Not assumptions, if it was actually quoted by the people who read these things. I.e. Polycarp, Clement of Alexandria. Polycarp knew the apostles. Clement of Alexandria was with Paul and Mark. They understood the Gospels. They seen what was written down. They seen what Mark wrote down. I mean, but again, in your worldview, all of this is he say, she say, right?
All of it? I mean, no, like, there are things about it which, like, I think Jesus existed. Like, we know Pilate existed. That's, like, not controversial at all, because even if the Bible had never been written, we would know Pilate existed, because there are other records of him.
Yeah.
You know, like, these places like Gethsemane and Bethlehem and whatever are real places. But to me, the biggest problem is, like, you know, Jesus isn't known, like, there isn't a single thing from his lifetime or piece of evidence from his lifetime connected to him. There are people like, what's the historian? Josephus mentions Jesus, but Josephus wasn't even born until after Jesus died, I'm pretty sure. So he never met the guy. And a lot of people think that was actually added, but, well, anyways.
So what do you think that the New Testament actually is? You don't think that they're eyewitness accounts?
Well, the stuff that Paul wrote would be stuff that Paul experienced or thought he experienced. There's several things that are traditionally attributed to him that a lot of professionals don't think he actually did write. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember which ones they are.
Paul is a different subject, but Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were they eyewitnesses of what Jesus said and did?
No, I don't think so, because the Gospels say these are the Gospels according to these people. And like in Matthew, when Matthew is talked about, it's in the third person. I mean, you can argue that people sometimes do that, but it's just kind of an excuse for the fact that it doesn't read like a piece of text that somebody that was there would have said, you know?
That's incorrect. It's most definitely, the Gospel of Matthew is most definitely a text that only of somebody who's knowledgeable in the financial realm of that specific culture at that time would know, i.e. Matthew.
Why financial? What financially, why? About that book is unique that only a supposed tax collector would know?
Right. There are consistent financial transaction scriptures all over the book of Matthew from a perspective that can only be from someone that has worked and had experience in that financial,
like what?
Professional.
Like Jesus is traded 17. Over for 20 pieces of silver by Judas Iscariot?
Well, that's one of them, but whatchamacallit, Matthew 17.
Anybody that knew the Hebrew Bible, which the Jews, which Jesus was, would have, that's just hearkening back to, that's the price of a slave in the Hebrew Bible is 20 pieces of silver.
Right, but the mention of specific coins and specific currencies inside of the Gospels, nobody would actually pay attention to that except for someone that has been a tax collector.
That's a terrible
You have Matthew
argument.
17, 18, 20. No, it's not. It's actually a pretty
anybody good that uses money would have known the kind of money that they use, and that would have included, I don't know about most people, but anybody that worked in any kind of trade would have used money, and would have had the capacity to write about
exactly
money.
People would have, okay, that's like saying, hey, I went to the store to go freaking give my money for the bills, right? But then a specific tax collector at that time is like, yeah, I went to the store to go trade in my denarii for this, that, and the third. It's like, that's how the Gospel of Matthew is written out. The specific coin, the specific type of currency, and the specific type of situation that happened. That's what I'm talking about.
Do you know of any off the top of your head? Because I definitely don't.
What do you mean?
Can you think of any that occur in Matthew? Because I am not aware of any.
Like scriptures?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have Matthew 17:24-27, 18:23-35, 21 through 16.
Matthew 17. Yeah.
24 through 27.
The collectors of the two drachma template tax came to Peter and asked, "Doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax?" "Yes, he does." When Peter came in, Jesus first spoke, "Why do you..." Okay, well, that doesn't... Oh, well, to collect taxes from their own children. So, didn't everybody have to pay the tax?
Yeah, everybody... Yeah, sure. Everybody had to pay the tax. That was the rule.
So anybody paying the tax would have known what the tax is.
No, that's not what I'm trying to say, bro. What I'm trying to specifically say is that in only Matthew's gospel, no one really dives deep into transactional verses like Matthew does. From his perspective, that's my argument. Like, yeah, anybody that pays tax is going to know what the heck tax is. But in the Gospels, in what is it, Luke, John, and Mark, you don't see that many financial transactional scriptures like you do in the book of Matthew. And then on top of that, another big one that I wanted to point out was in only Matthew's gospel, Jesus specifically told Peter not to give offense to tax collectors when they asked you to pay taxes. Well, according to that culture and given history, tax collectors were basically scrutinized and ridiculed because it's like, okay, well, you're a Jew, but you're pledging your allegiance to the Romans taking taxes from us. They were despised. And that goes to the assumption that, hey, Peter and Matthew had a little bit of an issue because Matthew kept hounding him to pay his taxes, basically.
Could That's be. Another piece it's a decent argument.
Yeah.
I gotta go. I literally do have to go. But it was chill. You're a pretty cool dude, so it was nice talking to you. So I'll see you. You can come to any of my lives anytime you want. We can talk about science if you want.